Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name's Michelle Cachat, and joining me in the conversation today is Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing great. Thanks.
Well, I'm going to quote some of your words back to you. Don't you love that when people bring your own words back to you?
Well, it depends on what they are.
Okay, these aren't bad, I promise. You once said, if you are working more than 55 hours a week, you are likely working too much and out of alignment with your priorities.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, and you said this a couple years ago, I think, do you still feel that way?
I do. And the reason I feel that way is that there's more to life than work. And if you're working more than 55 hours a week, you know, it should be a clue to you that something needs adjusted because you're probably sacrificing some aspect of your life that you really can't afford to sacrifice if you're in it for the long game.
So be honest here. I want you to like be completely transparent. How many hours a week? I mean, we watch you online. We see all the different projects you're doing. I watch you. I know you pretty well, and I watch you, and it looks like you're working all the time. But how many hours a week would you say you're truly working?
Probably 40 to 45.
Okay.
Yeah, because literally, I don't get started till 9 in the morning, and I quit promptly at 6. I don't work on the weekends. And occasionally, after dinner, I might get back online. You know, it depends on, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I've built up a team, which makes it look like I've got more presence than I really do. But there's a lot of people doing things for me.
All right. Makes sense. All right. So now tell us, for those of us who feel like we're working, you know, far too many hours, whatever that number may be, what assets are at risk if we continue to push ourselves too hard, too many hours?
Yeah, I think there are 5. And let me just give these to you quickly. But first of all, your health. Mm-hmm. You know, that's huge. I thought early in my career, I could get by it by eating junk food and not exercising. When you're young, you think you can live forever, right? But what I learned is that eventually that catches up with you, and it caught up with me. And I could tell you about a lot of the things that happened. One thing that did happen was my gallbladder exploded. I don't know how directly related that was, but I have to believe there was some impact mm-hmm. from the quality of food that I was eating. But I think there are a lot of people who have died young simply because they refused to take care of themselves. It was like a self-inflicted wound. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are congenital diseases. There are things that happen to you that you don't have control over, whatever. But I think a lot of health-related issues are self-imposed. And we do it to ourselves because we don't take care of ourselves. And I think when you work more than about 55 hours a week on a steady basis, I realize mm-hmm. there are seasons when, you know, you may go out of balance. But when you do that on a regular basis, you're putting your health at risk, and that's the first asset.
All right. What would the other assets be?
Okay. So the second one would be your family.
Okay.
Here's the deal. You can't afford a divorce. I can't either.
It's expensive. Don't do it.
I mean, it's incalculable.
Yes. So true. Not just financial, but the cost is massive.
Yeah. Everything. And I watched one of my really good friends a couple years ago go through a divorce, and I don't think to this day he has any idea really of the cost, the impact, the collateral damage that was imposed not only on him, but his family and even his mm-hmm. friends. Mm-hmm. And I think also you can't afford to ignore your children, which is one of the things that happens when we're working too much. You know, if you don't invest in them now, you're going to be forced to spend time with them later, whether it's in rehab or juvie or worse. So that's the second asset. Third asset is your friendships. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't really have any close personal friends till maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And I thought my acquaintances and my colleagues at work were enough. I had that confused. But the thing about relationships is that they really do create good health. I mean, there've been study after study that shows if you want to live long, if you want to live well, that a network of intimate friends is really important for that. Mm-hmm. But if you're working all the time, you don't have time to cultivate those
friendships.
There's
no time for it.
That's right. The fourth thing is just your effectiveness. And, you know, I'm certainly guilty sometimes of thinking I could just, you know, muscle my way through activities and just keep at it, keep pouring on the coal and, you know, make it through. But the truth is, there comes a point where you just, it's a law of diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. And you know how it is. You know, it's late at night. You've got a book deadline due. You know this.
Yes,
I know this. We were talking about this before we started. You've got a book deadline due. You're trying to do the edits. You're trying to finish it up, get it off to the publisher. And at some point, and for me, you know, usually if I'm working past 6 o'clock at night when I'm tired, things just take twice as long. Whereas when I'm rested, you know, if I wake up after having a really good night's sleep, you know, I can knock out stuff that would have taken me 2 hours at night, would take me 1 hour in the morning. So your effectiveness. And then finally, fifth, your influence.
Yes.
You know, and this is really important, especially for those of you that are business owners or for those of you that are executives in corporations. The people who report to you, the people you work with, unconsciously begin to mimic you. And you may have noticed this when you go into another organization. They don't even see it in themselves anymore, but maybe they all kind of dress alike, or maybe they use some of the same verbal expressions, or the way they enunciate certain words, whatever it is, have the same kind of laugh. But it's an unconscious thing, this whole idea of mimicking. It's human nature. Uh-huh. But what happens is when you're a leader, people are going to mimic the good and the bad. And you're going to set the pace whether you like it or not. So if you work 70 hours a week, your people think they have to work 70 hours a week to satisfy you. That's what the new standard is. Mm-hmm. You set the standard, and they believe unconsciously that that's a standard they've got to keep. The problem is that most of them are not going to be able to keep up. And you're going to be responsible for the consequences. So maybe your marriage can handle it, because maybe you're in a different season of life. Mm-hmm. Great. But what about those that can't? Mm-hmm. Or they go through a divorce, one of their kids goes off the rails, or their health is a bust. Are you willing to accept responsibility for that? Because as a leader, you didn't exert the kind of influence that had a positive impact on people, mm-hmm. but you were unconsciously setting a standard that they couldn't keep up with. So these five assets are critical: your health, your family, your friends, your effectiveness, and your influence. And I want to just say that I believe, Michelle, like I know you believe, in working hard. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really believe about productivity is that when you have the right productivity system in place, it allows you to be fully present at work so that you're not thinking about home, so that 1 hour equals 2 hours when you're distracted. But if you're highly focused and really zeroed in, you can get a lot done. And I get a lot done. You know, I'm a very productive person. I don't mind saying so. I've got a lot of faults, but productivity is not one of them. But I'm not thinking about my wife when I'm at work, and I'm not thinking about my kids. I'm focused on my work, but then I let it go.
Yes.
And when I'm with them, I can be fully present with them, so I'm not thinking about my work. So I really believe in hard work, and I really believe that the challenge of our time is to figure out how you can create a system, how you can design a work-life balance, where you're not working more than 55 hours a week, and you're still able to win at work and succeed at life.
So here's my question, because you just mentioned this phrase, work-life balance, which I knew that was going to come up, because there's a question about whether or not balance is really possible, or if balance is really what we're aiming for.
Right.
So can you speak to that for just a minute?
Yeah, it's kind of a flawed metaphor. And so I tend to think of it more as managing my priorities.
Okay.
But let's just take with the balance for a second. And Daniel Harkavy and I talked about this in our book, Living Forward. But when you're in balance, it doesn't mean that you're applying the equal amount of time to every domain of your life, mm-hmm. right? To every account. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that, you know, work-life balance means that I'm spending 55 hours at work, and I'm spending 55 hours with my family, and I'm spending 55 hours at church or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
And that's not even reasonable.
It's not possible.
No, because you don't have that many hours in a week. Mm-hmm. What it does mean is that you're spending an appropriate amount of time and energy and focus in each of those areas. Okay, so I can, for example, I work out, and this is just me, and you don't even have to do this much, but I work out an hour a day, 6 days a week. You know, some people, maybe if you're training for the Olympics, you got to work 4 or 8 hours at your job, but that's not me. But mm-hmm. I don't spend zero either. So I spend the appropriate amount of time based on my own judgment. There's no, you know, standard you can go to and find out what the right amount is. I spend an appropriate amount of time on my family, and I spend an appropriate amount of time in work and church and all the rest.
Yes.
But here's the thing about it. Now, I want you to think back to a time when you were physically trying to get your balance. Maybe you were working out at the gym. Maybe you were doing a ropes course. But when you're trying to be in balance is a time when you're really kind of shaking and you're trying to, you're working hard to maintain that balance. That's normal. I think sometimes we think that if we're in balance, we're going to be in this zen-like state and we don't have to work. You know, we just kind of float and it all works.
All falls into place just perfectly,
that's
right?
That's right. Well, so my trainer this morning, I was doing this particular exercise where I was having to kind of squat down like I was sitting down on one leg and pull the other, I don't know if I explained this, but almost like cross my leg onto the other one with nothing to sit on. Okay, and so I was all but falling over.
I feel
like
we don't have any Instagram pictures of this right now because that would be gold.
I know. I've been working on this exercise for a while and I'm better balanced than ever, but I still struggle with it. But I know how important balance is as I get older. But in that moment when I'm trying to be balanced, it's taking a lot of focus and a lot of work. And so you just have to live with that tension. And I think the same is going to be true for people as they strive to live a balanced life, is that it's going to feel like work. Because let's be honest, we live in a world where there's a ton of competing demands.
Yes,
right?
True.
You know, if you left it to the people making the requests, they would have all of you. Mm-hmm. You know, your church wants all of you. Your family wants all of you. Work wants all of you there. And you're there in the middle trying to sort of adjudicate all these demands and come up with an appropriate level of attention and focus and energy for each of those different accounts so that you can be balanced, because life is not just one compartment.
So good. All right. Well, the title of today's podcast is Do You Really Want Work-Life Balance? The Surprising Alternative. And we're delivering today, Michael, you're giving five suggestions for living according to priorities. So practicing or aligning your priorities according to how you really want to live. And so you have five very clear suggestions for how we can do that, which is good news because I think all of us feel that constant tension between our competing demands. So what is the very first suggestion you have for us?
The first one is to get crystal clear on your priorities. I said this is more about priority management than it is about balance. But I think that's where we've got to go first, is get crystal clear on our priorities. And I mean, literally write them down. What's the most important priority in your life? What's second? What's third? And so forth. When Daniel and I wrote Living Forward, you know, we said that you create a life plan by answering three questions, three powerful questions. And the second question is where we focus on priorities. You know, what's important to you? Not important to your spouse or your employer or, you know, your pastor or whatever, but what's important to you? You've got to take responsibility for that. So for me, my number one priority, I'm a Christian, person of faith, as are you. My number one priority is God, you know, and I'm not saying that has to be the same for everybody else. It's not going to be, but for me, that's the organizing principle for everything else. And I really should say the organizing person for everything yes. else. The second priority for me, and this surprises a lot of people, but we've talked about it on the show, the second priority is me. And it's a little bit like when you go on a flight and the flight attendant goes through that little spiel at the front end of the flight where they say, you know, in the event that the cabin loses pressure, oxygen masks are going to pop out of the roof. Yes. And before you attempt to help somebody else, make sure you affix the mask, can't say that, to your own face. Why? Because if you pass out, you're not going to be of any help to anybody.
You're no use at all whatsoever.
And so, I mean, to think through it like this, you know, if your health suffers and you're not working out, you're not taking care of yourself in terms of nutrition or getting adequate rest, if your health suffers, you're not going to be of use to anyone else if you're dead or sick. If you've got psychological baggage that is unresolved, you're not going to be really be in a position that you can help somebody else. If you're going through marital conflict or marital distress, you're not going to be of much help or much use on the job. You're going to be distracted. So you're not going to be focused. So it's important that you take care of yourself, take care of your relationship. So that's why I put myself second. And then after that comes my relationship with Gail, and then my kids. And about fifth on the list is my work.
All right. Well, I love, as far as this first suggestion is, getting crystal clear, not just writing down, I want to be a good person and live a good life. I mean, you're really literally being specific and clear about those priorities.
Yeah, I think it's important to have that list and to revisit it occasionally. And one of the things that Daniel and I recommend in Living Forward is that you engage in a process of weekly review and quarterly review. And the quarterly review is really the time when I'm looking at my priorities and saying, okay, in this season of my life, are these the priorities that make sense? Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I mean, since most of the kids left home, they have changed very little. They're pretty much the same as they have been for the last 10 years.
All right. So that first suggestion is to get crystal clear on your priorities. What is suggestion number two?
Yeah, suggestion number two is to schedule time for the things that matter most. And I don't know about you or the people that are listening, but if it's not on my schedule, it's not likely to get done. The most important things have to appear on my calendar, otherwise they're not going to get done. So I think scheduling those things are critical. We tend to easily schedule things related to work, right? Mm-hmm. So our appointments and all the rest. And by the way, one of the things that can really help at work so that you're not carrying work home and so you really can manage on 55 hours a week is to schedule time to do the projects that you've committed to. So I can tell you from the corporate world, one of the things that happened to me and a lot of executives is we tended to fill up the daytimes with meetings. Mm-hmm. And then we took our work home, and that's when we had to get the work done, all the work that was accumulating while we were sitting in the meetings, or the work that was being assigned to us in those meetings. We were expected to do that some of the time than during the daytime. Well, one of the ways to break that is to actually schedule time in what Jason Friedman calls the alone zone so that you actually have time to work on it. Because then when somebody asks you for some time, do you have time for this meeting? Then you can legitimately say, no, I've got another commitment then. Mm-hmm. But it's not just those things. It's scheduling things like, for me, what I just call my quiet time in the morning, mm-hmm. that's on my calendar because that's an appointment. That's a commitment that's very important to me. I have my commitment to my trainer is on there as well. And when I'm not training, which is only 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm working out Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday on my own. But those are commitments. So I don't take breakfast meetings. I had an invitation this week. Somebody said, can you get together at 7 o'clock on Thursday? I've got a meeting. I'd love to have you to come to this meetup. But I just said, man, I can't. I've already got another commitment. Well, I've got a very important commitment. I don't have a commitment in the short term. You know, and I could probably afford to miss that short term. And uh-huh. occasionally I do. I'm not legalistic about it. But it's not helpful for me to miss those on a consistent basis. Date nights with Gail. Those are on the calendar. That type of thing's got to get calendared.
All right. So the second suggestion is schedule times for things that matter most. And you're saying that those items are literally written down on your calendar, so they are scheduled. What is suggestion number three?
Okay. This was hugely helpful to me when my then coach, Dan Mube, suggested it to me. And it was this: establish a brief set of non-negotiables. You know, we spend a lot of energy making the same decisions over and over mm-hmm. again. You know, what time am I going to leave the office today, for example? And, you know, when am I going to have date night, for example? You know, those are the kinds of decisions that we could use that same energy doing the creative stuff instead of making those routine decisions. So let me give an example. I say brief, like 7 to 10 of these on the list. 5 is even better. Maybe even 3 would be better. But get a written set of non-negotiables. For example, I said this earlier, but focusing on personal development for me. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm in a season of life. Don't anybody else judge yourself by this. Yours is going to be different. But personal development for me is between 5 and 8 a.m. So I'm getting up promptly mm-hmm. at 5. I do it literally every day, unless I've gotten in really late the night before and I want to get my sleep in. But almost always it's 5 to 8 a.m. And that's one of my non-negotiables. Leave the office promptly at 6 p.m. I even have the lights on. I mean, you uh-huh. have the luxury of seeing me on video, but the lights behind me are programmed to go off at 6 p.m.
Nice. So I like that.
I mean, it's a visual clue.
I was going to say, it's a visual trigger to remind you of your commitment. You're non-negotiable.
Yeah. So, you know, so another one is take Gail on a date night every week. That's a non-negotiable. Another one for me is I attend church every week. You know, I don't get up on Sunday morning and wonder, you know, am I going to go to church this week? No, it's just one of my non-negotiables. I'm going to go. Most times it's great. Sometimes it's not. But I go every week regardless. Uh-huh. Same thing with date nights. Gail would probably say, sometimes you're awesome to be with, sometimes not so
sometimes
much.
Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not.
But she does it regardless.
All right. I love that. So this third suggestion is establish a set of non-negotiables. You want it to be brief. You said anywhere from 3 to 7, but just a handful of things that you just aren't going to compromise no matter what.
Yeah. And these are the things that are going to help you maintain this work-life balance that we're talking about.
All right. I love it. Well, so far, Michael has given us 3 of those suggestions out of 5 for this alternative to work-life balance, where you are aligning your life with your priorities and you're living according to those. We've got 2 more suggestions coming up, but before we do that, I want to ask you something quickly, Michael.
Okay.
There is something that so much of your audience cares about. I know because I hear them asking for it, talking about it, but what do you do when you have too many things on your to-do list? So how do you survive a workday when people and projects are constantly interrupting you?
Yeah, those are great questions, Michelle. You know, I used to deal with an overwhelming to-do list, you know, lots of lists, actually, a lot of interruptions throughout my career, but especially as a CEO. And many ambitious, high-achieving business owners, organizational leaders, entrepreneurs, ministers get bogged down in the to-do list trap. And they spend way too much time solving other people's problems.
And the truth is none of us can really get anything important done that way if we're just jumping from problem to problem.
Totally, you can't. It makes you miserable. And it also keeps you from focusing on the projects that could generate the most revenue or make the most impact. So recently, I've been putting together a 3-part video series to help busy professionals change their approach to productivity, so that they can conquer their to-do lists and get past the distractions and interruptions that are stealing their time. It's called Your Total Productivity Makeover.
I love it. Sounds great. What are you teaching exactly in this series?
Well, glad you asked. The first video is called Your To-Do List Tamer. And Michelle, do you want to know the truth about your to-do list?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
Okay, tell me.
80% of your tasks should never have made it on there to begin with.
Oh, well, you're speaking to the right person because you wouldn't even believe how long my to-do list is. So I'm a little panicked. I need that lesson. What else?
Well, that first one again is called the To-Do List Tamer, but the next 2 videos are called the Interruption Eliminator and the Productivity Flywheel. And I'm teaching high leverage strategies so that you engage with your tasks and commitments in a completely different way. And by the end, you're going to experience a lot more freedom.
I totally need this. And I need a complete overhaul. So how do I sign up for it? How do I get access to the videos?
It's super simple. All you do is go to freetofocus.com/makeover. That's freetofocus.com/makeover. Sign up there and you'll get your total productivity makeover for free. It's especially for entrepreneurs and people who run their own businesses, because when you're trying to keep the lights on and the doors open, you can't afford not to use the best possible approaches to your work.
Great. I love it. That, again, for those listening, that's freetofocus.com/makeover. And you can get all of those videos for free. Thanks so much, Michael. I love it.
Great.
Well, let's get back to our topic today, which is approaching life as a surprising alternative to work-life balance, to instead align your life according to your priorities. And so far, Michael has given 3 suggestions for making that happen. It begins with 1, get crystal clear on your priorities. Write them down. 2, schedule time for things that matters most. And then suggestion 3, establish a set of non-negotiables. Michael, what is your next suggestion?
4 is to strive for alignment between your priorities and your daily practice. You know, this is the challenge all of us have. You know, we come up with a list of priorities. We think, great, this will nail it. We have a list of non-negotiables. Awesome. But if it were just that simple, you know, the challenge is to practice what we preach, even if it's only to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why you have to go in periodically to get your wheels aligned, because just the natural effect of traveling on roads that are uneven or under construction is that things get knocked out of alignment. Mm-hmm. Same is true in our lives. You know, maybe there's that big project that just absolutely has to be done, or you're in the middle of a season where you're introducing a new product or whatever it may be, things can get out of alignment. So you have to strive for this alignment and you have to make it a priority to get things back in alignment when they get out of whack.
Which is why it's important, as you mentioned earlier, to on a regular basis, go back and look at that written list of priorities.
Yes, totally. Absolutely.
All right. So focus on alignment between your priorities and your practice to make sure that they actually represent each other really well, that you aren't just somebody of good intentions, but you're actually follow through on it in practice. What is suggestion number five?
Suggestion number five is to accept the fact that there will always be tension. You know, we said this at the very beginning, but I want to reemphasize this. This is not a problem to solve. It's a tension to manage. And I don't think there's going to ever be this magical moment. And I hate to disappoint people that are listening.
I'm a little crushed right now because I want a really easy solution, but there's just none.
I wished I had one. I wished I had a formula or an algorithm that you could use. But there's never going to be a magical moment where you suddenly achieve work-life balance. You've managed your priorities. You've got them all written down. Everything is playing out exactly as you envisioned it. No, there's always a tension. There's always this tension or temptation to get things out of whack, to not live your life plan, to not live your values. And you just have to accept that and be willing to work at it. It's kind of like if I have a friend that's a pilot, and he was telling me that just in flying a short distance, a couple hundred miles, that it really is... tons of course corrections are involved. Mm-hmm. You're constantly course correcting because it's the wind, it's the equipment, it's something else that's constantly pulling you off course. Well, that's life. And so we don't need to try to change that or explain it away. That's just how it is. And so if you go out of balance, or if you're listening right now and you're out of balance, you go, oh my gosh, you know, Michael and Michelle have been reading my mail and I'm that guy, you know, I'm that gal. I'm out of balance. I'm working 70 hours a week and it's not sustainable. I get that. Listen, don't beat yourself up. It happens. I've been there and I get there about once a year where I'm just out of balance and I have to address it. But it's a simple matter of kind of taking the car into the shop, getting things back in alignment and going your merry way.
Absolutely. And just so you know, you may have it only happen once a year. I feel like it happens to me about once every other month. So a little bit more often, but I think that's the nature of negotiating young children at home and full-time work and all of that. It's you have to constantly revisit it.
Well, you know, one of the things we didn't mention, but I think this is an appropriate time to talk about it too. Maybe it's a sixth suggestion, but one of the best ways to do this, because we can all fall into sort of self-deception or we're not self-aware of what is happening to us, but it's to have an accountability group, you know, a group of people that hold us to our best self, that hold us to the kind of life we've said we've wanted and will say to us in those moments when we're out of whack, you know what, buddy, you're a little out of alignment. You might want to check this. And that's one of the reasons why several years ago, I created my Inner Circle Mastermind and I did it with all guys, and I got a little bit of flack for that, and I don't want to rehearse that. It was painful, but that's who I felt called to serve because I've got a lot of experience being a guy. But I was so excited when you told me this past week that you're starting a mastermind for women, and I want you to talk about it.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, I'm so excited about this because the truth is, about 20 years ago, I wish I would have had this kind of group. I must have been about 27, 28 at the time. I was working in a very large national telecom company in their data networking division. I was in sales. You may not even know this, Michael.
I didn't know that.
And I loved the job, and apparently I did a good job at it because within a year or two, my boss's boss actually offered me a management position. So here I was 28 years old, and I was going to be the manager of the sales team, which is a huge deal, right? I was thrilled. However, it was a little bit more complicated than that because at the time, I was a single mom of a three-year-old, okay? And this new role would require a little bit more work and travel once a month. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the job would provide income that we desperately needed, not to mention an opportunity for me to develop my skills and really thrive in my work life. But this created a tension, kind of what we've been talking about, this tension between how do we navigate our conflicting roles. And the reality is I ended up turning down the position, actually, because I didn't feel it would align with my priorities. But in the you know, 15 to 20 years since then, I have found that same situation repeated again and again, where I found myself in this place of trying to negotiate how to honor my various roles in work, in relationships, in family, in my community, in a way that honors all of it. And it's just not easily done. So that's the reason I'm starting what I'm calling the Inspired Life Mastermind. It's for women who find themselves trying to navigate their often compartmentalized lives, and helping them find the clarity and the support and the resources to be able to thrive in their various roles to the best of their ability.
So who is this for? Describe the ideal candidate for somebody who ought to consider this.
Well, it's for women. So here we go. We have a group for women. My apologies to all the men out there. It's not that we don't value them, but my expertise is in women and women's roles in work and life. And so it's for women ages about 25 and up. They need to have some experience in the workplace, either as an entrepreneur, a small business owner, even a corporate employee. I've been all of those things. And similar to you, Michael, similar to your inner circle, it's a significant financial investment, and intentionally so. We want those who opt to be a part of this very small group to be fully vested in themselves, in the group itself, and the process. So it's a 12-month commitment, and I cannot wait to see the group that we gather with us.
And the basic format, and I know people can find out more on the landing page we're going to give them here in a second, but the basic format is you're going to have in-person meetings once a quarter?
We're going to have in-person meetings once a quarter where we just really dive deep into business strategy, relationship strategy. Faith is really the crux of so much that we're going to talk about. It's kind of the backdrop for that. But yeah, once a quarter face-to-face meetings. We're going to have monthly two-hour meetings. We're going to work through your best year ever goal setting process in January. We have
awesome,
so many fun things, and so I cannot wait.
Okay, so if people want more information, if this sounds interesting, where do they go?
They need to go to my website, which is michellekashat.com/mastermind. It's michellekashat.com/mastermind. All the information, including the deadline to apply, when the selections will be made, the first meeting, all of that will be on that landing page. So that way you can get all the information you need to make a decision.
Fantastic. And I just want to urge you guys to do this. I don't know of anything that will create faster transformation for you in your work and in your personal life than joining a mastermind, a guided mastermind like this. And I want to just say, I want to applaud you for charging for this. And here's why. I did one of these for several years for free, and the transformation was very minimal. Mm-hmm. And I came to the conclusion that when people don't pay, they don't pay attention. When they're invested, transformation happens more quickly. And this is not just, you know, me trying to justify charging for stuff, although I really believe it. But I really think that, I see it in my own mastermind, because people have made a significant investment. They're very keen to make sure that they're listening carefully, they're applying what they hear. And I've witnessed the transformation that happens both at work and at home. So if that sounds like you, if you're listening to this and you think, oh my gosh, this is like an answer to prayer, then go to Michelle's page and have a look at all the details about it.
Great. Thanks so much, Michael. This fits so well with our conversation about
it does.
Do you really want work-life balance? That's what we're aiming for, is to live out our lives, our mission with priorities dictating our practices, with those priorities being fully aligned with our practices. And Michael, you've given us great suggestions today on how to make that happen. Number one, get crystal clear on your priorities. Number two, schedule a time for things that matter most. Number three, establish a set of non-negotiables. Number four, focus on alignment between your priorities and your practice. It doesn't just happen, so you're going to have to evaluate that on a regular basis. And then five, accept the fact that there will always be tension. This is not something that's going to be resolved. It's going to be something you're going to have to navigate on an ongoing basis. But you do not have to work 55 hours a week. There's a better way to live. Well, if you enjoyed today's episode, you can get the show notes and a full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. Do us a favor before you go, however, it will only take a minute. Head over to iTunes and rate this podcast, especially if this content was helpful for you today. This is huge for us in terms of improving our rankings and keeping the show visible so others can discover it. Thanks so much for helping us out. Michael, do you have any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, the final one I would say is get clear on your intention. So you may not be able to go from 70 hours a week to 55 hours a week, you know, in the next 7 days, but I promise you this, you can do it over the next few months. But it starts with an intention and a clear vision of what you want, and then to begin to design your life and your work around that intention.
Excellent. Thanks, Michael, so much for your input. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.